Today's episode is sponsored by Umore. Umore helps us better understand and uplift our mental health with instant screening, data tracking, insights, and targeted exercises. I've had the pleasure of having both co-founders on the podcast, and I really admire what they do and love their vision behind the company. Umore is the AI-powered mental well-being tracker that helps you build positive habits, change behaviors, and share your progress with friends, family, and physicians. Umore's vision is to make mental health as seamless and as accessible as possible. Its purpose is to act as a support and prevention tool and to provide you with the data and insights to help you develop an awareness of your current mental state and stress levels. The way it works is very simple. You download the app for free on your smartphone. You fill in a quick questionnaire that will assess how you're currently feeling, which will act as a starting point, and it will check in with you daily to track your well-being over time and so that you are able to see your progression day by day. Umore also gives you access to many evidence-based exercises which are designed to help you live your happiest and healthiest life. The goal of Umore is to be your friend, is there to help and support you in your mental health journey. And to find out more, you can check out their website at umore.app. Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Greta Keza. Greta is a happiness and leadership coach and the head of customer experience at Mindvalley. She is the author of two happiness programs and is passionate about helping people solve their problems and guiding them to find the happiness they have always desired. During this episode, we discuss what it means to be truly happy. We talk about why many people struggle to find happiness and how we can all start to change our perspectives and take action by understanding that happiness is a choice. And the last message she wanted to share is to remember that happiness is within you and you just need to take a little time and choose to rediscover it within. Please welcome to the show, Ms. Greta Keza.
Hey, thank you very much and thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. So Greta, as we were just speaking before, we connected through LinkedIn and I know you work at Mindvalley, which I think everyone on the podcast knows by now. I'm a huge fan and I've had a couple of your colleagues on. It's been really awesome talking to them. But I wanted to speak to you in particular because I thought the work you do is very unique and niche as a happiness coach. And because that's not a typical coach that you hear about. You hear about career, you hear about strategy, you hear about life, whatever the case might be, but happiness is a very particular one. And I think especially given everything that's happened with the pandemic and so on, I think a lot of people are looking for happiness and what does that mean and how can we find it and so on. So I thought it'd be amazing to have you on the show. But before we get into everything, Greta, why don't you give all of us a little bit of background about yourself and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, sure. So I am a happiness coach and also as a part-timer in Mindvalley currently. So I had a big shift this September, just recently, and I work there as head of customer experience. Interesting thing though, what I'm thinking now that when people ask about the background, right, or bio, like immediately others start talking about their career and only professional life, you know, like it would mean everything, but that's a problem. That's why I talk about happiness, you know, because people tie everything to their job title. And I just did that as well. So besides what I just said, so I'm a Lithuanian living in Malaysia for the past 3.5 years, happily married, which is super, super good, right? Important. Relationships are important.
Always.
Well, I am in love with color yellow. So if anyone will be looking at this part of podcast somehow virtually, they will see, like visually, they would see that. And what else about me? Well, I have been trying a lot of different things until I found myself. And I think my tipping point as a young adult was not university, but a student organization called ICIT, where I tried so many different positions where I actually discovered that working with people, overall people management, facilitation, coaching, training is what I really love. So that is, you know, a bit of the background. And I guess that's it for now. I think we can dive deeper more, right?
Sure. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I always like, you know, for myself and the listeners to get an understanding, just who are we speaking to, you know, what's their background and how do we get to where we are today? So Greta, first of all, as a happiness coach, I guess the best place to start is, are you happy?
I am. I love this question.
Awesome. Awesome. And now, since you're happy, could you explain to us in your own words and describe what does it mean to you to be truly happy?
Thank Thank you for this question and for specifying to me, what does it mean to me to be truly happy? Because so often people ask me, what is happiness, Greta? And then I have to disappoint them saying that I think it depends on all of us. So what happiness is for me is when I wake up in the morning with inner peace, knowing that I am living my life in the best way possible I can in that moment, no matter what happens. When I feel gratitude in my heart for what I have at that moment, and also I am excited for what the future is going to unfold. So I would say for me, happiness is this combination of the present, meaning gratitude, and faith for the future that it's going to turn all right. And other thing, like somebody told me, so, but how would you define it in other ways? And I would say that also happiness for me is a choice or even a lifestyle, because I do believe that I can choose that. So that would be for
me. Yeah. Awesome. I really like how you described it for yourself. It's a kind of a holistic view on what you like, what gives you happiness, you know, like happy to be where you are now, optimistic about where you're going, and to have, I think you said it perfectly, inner peace. I think that's something I know I'm definitely trying to get to as well. That term peace, you just think like, ah, it would be so fun. But one thing I was thinking about, you made a good point that everyone has a different perspective on what happiness is. Do you think one of the issues people have and why they struggle to maybe be happy and find happiness is that they might not have a definition of what it is to them?
Yes. Like I want to scream answering to this question. I think this is the biggest challenge, because we are being told by our parents, by society, by school, by social media, by LinkedIn, by podcasts, how we should live our lives. But what happens is, just because we are so busy reading everything else around, we fail to make time to tap inside and ask ourselves, what actually is happiness for me? You know, what does it mean to me? How do I understand it? And I really think not having this definition or not having this clarity, not necessarily putting it in words, but describing this feeling, you know, what is this thing for me? Not having it, not going to lead anywhere well. And I think this is the reason why we try to achieve so many different things in terms of doing, career, profession. And we're still thinking like, why the heck am I not happy if I'm achieving all of this? Well, that's because that maybe not these things are making you happy. So I would say it's a huge problem.
Yeah. I think you made a good point about how the lack of definition we start looking at. I think the words you used were interesting, that we look at work, we look at profession, we look at career, because we attribute, I guess a lot of us attribute work, profession to money, which means success, which means happiness. You know, that seems to be the general formula. But I guess there's, like you said, and listening to your definition, there's more things and maybe simpler things that can make you happy that maybe you haven't thought of. And that's why we keep trying to do this. Oh, will this make me happy? Will that make me happy? But you said something which I've heard before, when you said that happiness is a choice. Now, that is a tricky one for me. I understand it. And I do agree with it. But if someone came to me and was like, Khalid, I'm unhappy. I want to be happy. And I told them, okay, happiness is a choice. First of all, I think they'd be a bit confused. Like, what? I never even knew I had the option to choose that. But second, let's say they understand, okay, happiness is a choice. How do you start to choose to be happy, number one? And how do you actually start genuinely feeling happy? Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I think I do. Let's see. So I do agree that this is a tricky one, because this can also come across in the entitled way of, let's say, if the person is unhappy and not feeling well, and somebody else says, you know, like, just choose to be happy. This is so easy. So I'm not talking about this part, right? Which I think is pretty negative. And this comes to toxic positivism. What's the word for that? Toxic positivity.
Positivity.
Toxic positivity, right? Which I'm not talking about here. So I don't know why. So what happens here is how to choose that happiness, right? And I really agree with you saying that people get confused firstly by, oh, I can. Yes, you can, you know? As we're choosing to, you know, dress up in a certain way, we can actually choose the intention for the day to see more good than bad. I'm not saying to ignore the bad. I'm not saying to pretend that everything is perfect. I'm just saying to see more good. Because looking from, you know, scientific human perspective, our brains are wired to see the negative. So this is what happens. And that's why naturally, as human beings, we're kind of choosing subconsciously to see the negative, to see the danger, to see something that is not good. So the first step for sure would be increasing awareness. How to do that? There are simple things, you know, what we can do and simple exercises that I do with my clients as well. One, of course, is gratitude. And I wouldn't even start with that. I think we can Google 3,000 benefits of practicing gratitude. Just the key here, what I want to emphasize is practicing gratitude, not knowing that it's good, not reading just about it, but actually practicing. But second thing that can even be easier to start with, and I think everyone who's listening can adapt it here and now, is simply at the end of the day to find, let's say, 10 nice things that happened today. 10 things that make you feel lighter, happier, more fulfilled, inspired, that were beautiful. They can be tiny, tiny, or super huge. Like, it doesn't cost you almost anything, just the mindfulness. But what happens, and I love this so much, is if we keep practicing it from day to day, not only in the evening we remember and notice good things and feel happier because of that, but next days our brains are already scanning, hey, in the evening I'll need to write down those 10 things. What is good around me? What is good? And then we actually start seeing it. Because this is the thing, I think sometimes we're walking with these like kind of dirty glasses. Let's say now I'm wearing glasses, right? Dirty glasses, and we simply don't see the colors. And this is where I talk about the choice, that we can clean the glasses a little bit, put emphasis on our awareness and say, hey, is there anything good actually at the moment, right? And starting from there, I think that could be a very beautiful beginning, and then we would take it from there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I love the analogy you just used about it's like we're walking around with dirty glasses and we can choose to, you know, clean them and see the color. I think that's a beautiful analogy and really like sums up what you're talking about. So gratitude obviously is something that, like you said, there's 10 million articles about and like the benefits of it and so on. And I noticed for me, even for myself, when I started doing that, that it did help. It definitely did help because especially when like you have on a good day, it's easy. You're just happy. You're buzzing, you know, so like you don't really feel the need to be grateful. But on the tough days when it's like, oh, today's been terrible, or that client or this work or that stress or your relationship, whatever that might be, it really helps just kind of bring things down, kind of just relax you a little bit and to take account or awareness, like you perfectly put it, that there is good things that did happen today. It was not all a disaster. It wasn't all terrible. I'm curious, when shifting off topic slightly, but do you think, because as we said before, everyone has a different definition for happiness, right? But in terms of the things, like the things we just talked about that anyone can do and that will help them, when you're working with different clients, what do we have to tailor that's maybe more towards them in particular?
Can you rephrase the question?
Yeah, so in terms, when we're trying to, I guess, coach, when you're trying to coach someone to be more happy and so on, you'd advise them to do things like you know, the gratitude, you know, all those kind of, you know, exercises and so on to get them started. And then afterwards, is there a point where it goes from being general things you would ask any client to do to become something now more specific and targeted to help this particular client find the happiness that they want?
Okay, love it. Very good question. I would say yes, So what happens, especially because I mostly, coach on happiness people in groups, in my group programs. And what happens there is actually that when people come in groups and they notice that same things can be differently perceived by others, they have a very beautiful perspective for their own happiness, that it's okay or it's normal to have your happiness this way. And there are differences in people. So what happens, let's say, in programs usually, that I do give a certain list of daily potential habits to try for 7 days, make them, journal, reflect, analyze, how does it work, how does it affect people, right? And we go through there, and what happens there is people react to these habits differently. And then there are bigger exercises that are reflection-based. So starting from, describing your relationships, all the relationships that you have, impact on you, like how you foster them or not. And then these kind of exercises help people to actually have very tailored answers. So what I love saying is that I would never want to be called happiness teacher, right? Or happiness lecturer, because I don't believe that I can teach happiness. I believe strongly that I can give tools, practices, my coaching support, reflection exercises, and like potential to reflect what people are saying, right? Reflect back with my words, with my summaries, and then they discover what's that for them. So this is where all these differences come along. And the next part is, I guess I would call it like the core exercise, the core exercise that I'm using. Maybe I was thinking about oxytocin, also one of the happiness hormones. It's called Happiness Wheel of Life. And when people do it, and when they look holistically into their happiness, when they look in different areas of their life, and they kind of draw a very interesting wheel, they put certain marks, they could put their expectations, they put how they feel there, how they want to feel. This gives very beautiful picture on how this big happiness, holistic happiness looks for each and everyone. And from there, then they can have their different and individualized steps taken.
Gotcha. No, that makes a lot of sense. I love how you describe that. You give people a list of habits to practice for 7 days. And I think you made a great point that, and which I didn't consider, that everyone will react to those differently. You know, there might be some things that they like, some things they don't like, some things that really work for them, some things that didn't. And I like how in your group settings that everyone's kind of sharing what they're trying to do and what happiness means to them and so on, or what, how they would define happiness. And I think perspective on anything is so important, because you can look at something. That's why, for example, I love doing this podcast, because every topic or everything I've discussed on the podcast, I've had a perspective of it before we had a conversation. And then after I speak to someone, I'm like, oh, okay, now I can see it completely differently. So, having perspective could be a game changer and make you really appreciate, like, oh, why does that make that person happy? Yeah, could it be that? Can it be that simple? Why am I, why do I think it's so complicated and so on? But I think those exercises are great.
Can I add one thing? Just, I remembered one very concrete example.
Yeah.
So there was one participant. So we had the situation where the suggestion was to actually incorporate more meditation into the life, or more at least mindful pauses. And after a few days, this person is telling me, Greta, I think meditation is not for me. Is it possible? And like, it can be, try more and see how it goes. And then again, she's like, I don't like it. Like, it doesn't go this way. How can I change, this exercise? So I told her about potential walking meditation, where you simply, walk, observe the nature, you become mindful, etc. But the interesting thing happened in the group coaching session where she shared this. She's like, guys, I think meditation is not for me. And all articles are screaming that meditation is good. Sit and meditate and you will be more peaceful, happier, etc. And then just as a joke, as a note, I said, well, what do you think? My husband, I think, never meditated, and I think he's still pretty happy. And she's like, wait, the husband of a happiness coach never meditated, so I'm okay? I said, of course you're okay. So not everything what media writes we have to do, we should do, because maybe it's not aligned to us at this moment. Maybe we're not ready or not ready yet, or just not for us. So this is a beautiful example where, as you said, perspective matters and an individualized approach really matters, because we all are okay. You know, we don't have to be perfect or do everything how blog posts are saying.
I really, really love that example. And it's so true that, especially with things like mindfulness, with things like happiness, with things like gratitude, everyone, there's so much information out there. And is it all positive? Yes. Does everyone need it? And even, actually, you saying that makes me even think, I'm like, oh, maybe not everyone needs it. I know I need it for me, but that's fine. But I think to remember that it's find an individually tailored approach. That's what's most important. Find out what works for you. Find out what you like. Find out what you think is going to help you. And just keep, and obviously you have to do this through experimentation and keep trying. Like, I have people that have told me when it comes to meditation, it's so funny. They're like, oh, I meditated once, it didn't work. I'm like, do you know how many... Do you know how many times I tried to meditate and it was a disaster? How many different types of meditations I've done? How long? Everything. You know, I just kept going until I found something that worked for me. Coming back to happiness, now that you're as a happiness coach and working with the clients or the people that you've worked with, do you see some people have, is there a common like misconception about what happiness means and being happy that you found working with people or from the people that you've spoken to? Or in general, what do you think some of the misconceptions about that people have on happiness are?
It's a huge yes. I remember when I started this and started talking to people and researching more and, you know, asking them questions, I realized that we human beings are, and I'm very sorry for everyone, not that unique in terms of misconceptions, you know, because we are affected probably with similar external factors. And this is how these misconceptions come to the place. So some of them are, and I think one of them you mentioned, that success equals happiness. Adding certain, like not adding, but checking certain checkpoints or check marks that, you know, society gives. And the very, very simple one is, finish school, finish university with good grades, get a job, find a partner, get married, then have kids, you know, have a house maybe, travel sometimes for 1 week, you know, all the standard package. We are being promised that this is what will lead us to happiness, because this is called so-called success. So I think this is the huge lie. It's a huge lie we are being told constantly by media, people, society, and everyone. And this what happens, that we start chasing and we are realizing that, wait a second, I achieved this, but this didn't really bring me joy or happiness. So I went through that myself in 2017 and I learned a huge lesson that happiness is not equal to success, you know, or like more or less like success is not equal to happiness, because I think now when I'm happy, I am successful, but not other way around. So that's one misconception, right? Second one is focusing everything, and it's a similar one, to professional life and putting your identity under your company brand or job title and presenting yourself as your job, as I did. but you see, I learned it. I'm trying my best to unlearn. But basically that if I'm happy at work, that's good. If I'm not happy, that's it. Life is over. So that is also one of the things where people don't see different areas of their life. And that's why we're working to actually see, is there work only, or you have maybe 5 more, 6 more, or 10 more areas of your life to look at. And one more, I mean, there are so many, but one more, which I feel sometimes uncomfortable about when I go and speak to people, especially when I'm not kind of, you know, invited by person by person, but let's say there is like, Greta, lead a lecture or like a seminar on happiness to these people. And when I come to them and they're not kind of ready, and I start talking about happiness, and they're like, oh, so happiness is unicorns and rainbows. So Greta, now you're saying to us that we have to smile all the time, jump in the air, and just pretend everything is fine. And then they become usually very ironic. because they're thinking that the word happiness means that everything is just perfect. And maybe this is how this word is being used overall. But again, the question is, what is it for you? Can a person be angry at someone and still be a happy person in his or her life? I think yes. Do I sometimes cry? Yes, but that doesn't make me unhappy person on a grander scale. Because I think there's this mixture about momentarily happiness and overall happiness. I still haven't found the term to call it properly, but I'll try. I'll find one day when I'm writing the book, maybe. But this, like, in the moment or like overall. So I think these emotions can go together. I hope I answered your question and didn't talk too much.
No, please talk as much as you want. This is your show, and you're the expert. Sure. So I want to learn, we all want to learn from you. But so many things you said that I'm like that I resonated with. One is, people have this idea that I think happiness is like everything's perfect, and at the same time, what you said about people, I think there's a misconception that people have that. How could I feel angry or upset or frustrated if I'm happy? A happy person doesn't feel these things. Even, for example, even if I'm being honest, even where I am right now in my own life, I'm like, am I happy with who I am? Absolutely. I love myself. And that's not saying in a cocky way. I just love who I am. But at the same time, are there other areas in my life that I'm not the happiest about? Of course, 100%. You know, am I where I want to be? Many different things. But so I think it's very important to be able to distinguish between, I can be happy and still like react and live life as anyone else would. It doesn't change anything. You know, it's just those are emotions that come, those are stresses that come. But at the end of the day, I think finding, the way I see it, happiness is a foundation. And then everything else is kind of what life throws at you, that's up in the air. What do you think? Do you resonate with that?
I love it. I really love it. And I think maybe we can even look for different synonyms for that, you know, like living your life to the fullest, living according to your purpose, feeling like whatever you are doing, not necessarily in professional life, right? Matters, fulfillment, contentment, inner peace. We can name it in so many words. I simply chose happiness because I think it's the easiest recognizable and we can kind of wrap it around. But I really resonate with you because I even sometimes get these comments. My husband loves telling me this. If I'm like grumpy sometimes and says something to him like, no, 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 no. He's like, oh, why aren't you positive? You're a happiness coach. So I kind of get a slap on my face. And my parents do that as well. Like, oh, so you coach people to be happier, right? And I'm like, yeah, it's not that coaches are better at life. Coaches are better at coaching. Let's put that, you know, there. And of course, I want to practice what I preach, and I do. But me being annoyed by something doesn't make me a happy person or a bad person, right? It's perfectly normal. So what you described resonates to me so much. And I think sooner we realize that, more freedom we can give to ourselves and be more gentle in our inner chatter.
Yeah, I think you said that last word that you said is perfect, more gentle, because I think that comes also back to, okay, this can go into so many different ways, but it comes back to accountability and so on and all that kind of stuff and holding yourself accountable and the responsibility. And I'll get sucked into that because I love talking about that. So I'm just going to try to keep us on track. Something you said in your LinkedIn live, which I really liked, but I wanted to understand more of what you were talking about. You said, and I think it's a great thing to hear, that you don't have to wait till like you're in such a bad place or like things are so negative for you to change that. You know, you could be, and that was something that kind of made me think about things. I'm like, oh, you could be like content and happy, but that doesn't mean you couldn't be happier and more fulfilled and so on. So that, why, you know, you don't, it doesn't have to be bad for you to change it. It can be positive and you can still change it for something even more positive. But you also said that there doesn't always have to be a safe alternative. And that's the part that I was like, Okay, let me understand what Greta's talking about, and then I want to dive into that a little bit more.
Sure. I think that was related to those two misconceptions or reasons why people thought I'm going part-time, right? So yeah, about the perfection versus like happier or leaving the place that is not really bad, but just okay-ish and heading to what's better. I think people don't do that enough, maybe even in relationships, right? Or jobs as well, or places where they live. Some people don't even question, can they become better or like, can they feel better, rather, I would say. But let me, you know, get into the second point that surprised you a little bit about the safe option. What I noticed from my experience, my personal experience while making changes in my life and also working with different people and generally talking to my friends, right, and colleagues, is that people don't take a step unless they are, I don't know, 90% sure that this is correct or the other alternative is going to be better. So what happens is that they end up keeping that current situation because it's safe, known, comfortable, instead of going for something that can be maybe much better, but unknown, uncomfortable, and not yet safe. And I see that so many times in relationships. Let's say when people, and I don't want to become a relationship coach, I think it's a very difficult thing to do, but just examples, and I know from most of my friends' experiences, my own in teenage years, that, you know, you better stay with the partner that you're like, I don't really like it, it's bad, or even toxic relationship, instead of going to be on your own, to be single for a while, just because the fact of being single scares you so much. So you don't have safe alternative. You have no clue whether you will feel good there or not. So you'd rather stay where it bothers you or you don't really feel fulfilled, but you at least know what to expect. Does it make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think you touched on it very well, that the fact that it's unknown, I think it's a big one that makes you feel super uncomfortable to take that step, especially if you're thinking of like leaving a job to start a business or so on. That's going from something that, I love that example because it's something that's so, quotation marks, on paper, it's very secure, to going to something that is anything but, and there's doubt and there's so many other things that that fall into that. And I think that's a very valid point, that is a reason why a lot of people maybe don't take a leap or take that chance, and because of that they stay in something that's may not necessarily be good for them, or something that they might miss an opportunity because of that. You know, I guess that fear. So I think you explained it really, really well. I'm curious in your story. I know recently you decided to go part time, and I'd love to because I remember you mentioned it wasn't aligned with where you were trying to go. So, but you also mentioned the live that it was a scary decision. So it's not like, oh, you decided to go part time and it was easy and stuff. So I don't want people to think that it, because all the things we just talked about, you probably experienced it before you took, you know, this decision. So could you tell us the story behind it? Like, how long did it take you to get to that decision? How did like it start, and how has it been for the past month now that you are working part-time?
Okay. So long story short, 30 years ago, no, I was born. okay. We'll go a bit back to the memory line.
Yeah.
I remember the time when I got a dream job at the age of 23, which was the in-house corporate trainer. Oh my God, I don't know how they hired me, why they made this decision. You know, 23 years old girl going to teaching people how to live. That's crazy. But I got it. I went there. That was awesome. Besides that job, because it was a very corporate job, I had a lot of different activities where I feel I was fulfilling my potential, which was volunteering, attending Toastmasters Club, and competing in various international competitions on public speaking. Then, you know, going to schools, teaching something to children. So there were so many different projects and things I was doing after my work. I love my work, but what I did after was also cool. So then when we had when we had our big change of life, my husband in 2017, when we quit our jobs, very good jobs, we got married, we bought one-way ticket to the United States of America for our honeymoon without knowing what we're going to do after. I was realizing and thinking, what should I do? What should I not do? That was a tipping point in my happiness journey, to be honest. And I think I'm standing here just because of that decision. And then I thought of applying to Mindvalley, because at first I thought, well, Mindvalley is like Google, too good to be true for somebody else, not for me. That was my understanding. But when I saw my friends working there, I'm like, oh, if they can, I can too, at least to try. So sure. I applied, and Mindvalley became everything to me. Because you see what happens, that when we move to Malaysia, to Kuala Lumpur, it's totally different country, right? Everything is different. And still, I even, like, I got my husband by my side, but still I didn't have my friends, my family, everything was new. So Mindvalley became my everything, my work, my lifestyle, my hobby, my parties place, my social network, everything. And I feel I was like soaked in so much by choice, but later, you know, unconsciously. And I really loved it, right? I didn't need any extra curriculum activities. That was everything, all day long, weekends, the same people. And that was amazing. However, I was in the field where I haven't planned being at all. I got the job as customer support agent. And I remember me coming from being in-house trainer and training more than 1,000 of people, you know, on soft skills, coming to customer support job. It wasn't a bad thing. Some people said it's a step back. I think that was step aside, you know, like not aside, but to the side.
Yeah.
I loved it, but I thought I'm going to stay there 3-4 months. Well, 3.5 years passed. I'm still around this area. Right. But I think this happened because I got the chance to actually lead the team and lead the whole department very early, which I love doing. And that was my main motivational factor. However, I started thinking more, especially when pandemic hit, and asking myself, oh, I have more time. What is happening with me? So I'm socializing less with those people. We have less maybe social events, maybe parties, maybe culture days. How am I feeling? And this is the key in happiness, I think. Start ask, like, sometimes ask yourself, are you okay? It's not like for that, so that you create negative scenarios, but so that you understand. And I started asking me, like, am I fulfilled? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I doing what makes me alive the most? And I'm like, damn it, something is missing. I love my team. I love challenges. I adore Mindvalley mission. I even like working with customers, like I really love it, right? Directly and indirectly, but it's not my thing, you know? I realized it's not my thing. And I was thinking, what should I do? I love talking about leadership, etc. And then one friend of mine asked me, it was 2020, April 2nd, I think I will always remember. She asked me, Greta, have you ever thought of becoming a happiness coach? And I was like, what? What is this thing? Like, anybody says that? She's like, yeah, even on LinkedIn. I'm like, on LinkedIn, people say they're happiness coach? That's nonsense, you know? It's so unprofessional. But, well, see where we are now. But why I'm telling, like, such a long story, and I hope this makes sense so that it goes into the logic, is because I started doing something with coaching, with happiness long back, without naming it. And when I started realizing that this is something that I love, I started taking conscious actions and I started creating my first program and having first pilot beta clients. And I realized, damn, this is working. And I love doing it. And I started comparing days when I would be working solely on Mindvalley or on weekends on my happiness coaching. And I'm like, damn, this is the feeling. I want to have more of what I get from happiness coaching. So that was one part, that I was feeling more aligned in the moment, more aligned with my mission. But also when I now think, I was overworking as hell. I was waking up in the morning, working on my happiness coaching, working on Mindvalley, evenings happiness coaching, weekends happiness coaching. I simply realized it's not sustainable long term. And I want to take care of my body as well to sustain me. So I needed to make this decision, but that was very scary.
That's a fantastic story, and
very long one,
I'm
right?
So happy. No, but that's, but I love the detail in it, because that's when I like people when they're explaining why they took such a big decision. I like to know all as many details as possible, because then once you get to where you are now, which is the ending of it, you have a completely different idea of why they made that decision, and it makes it so much more relatable to anyone else, you know, listening to this as well. I think, first of all, I don't know how you and your husband decided to just all of a sudden like quit your jobs in 2017 and let's take a one-way ticket. I know for a fact I can't do that. So I commend people who can, because that's literally, I can go into unknown a little bit, but I can't dive in. Like that's just not me. But then to find, you know, Mindvalley and see, from the sounds of it, you've had a fantastic time there. But like myself, like so many people I've spoken to recently, actually on this podcast, the pandemic was kind of that, like, just that smack to the face to make you like take a step back and be like, okay, how did I get to this point in my life? How did I get to where I am? And to actually question and start asking yourself all these things. Like you said, it's so important to ask yourself, am I okay? Am I happy? Is this what I want to do? Is this not what I want to do? Is this where, what's my vision for what I'd like to do? All these questions, like you correctly said, is not to make you feel negative about it. It's just to make you more aware and to actually challenge yourself to be like, oh, maybe this isn't. And similar to you, when I started the podcast, and I'm as a hypnotherapist now as well, I was looking for like what would fulfill me. That was the question, because I used to do sales and I love people, but I just hated selling. I'm like, ugh, no, that's not for me. I'd rather just speak to people in a much more relaxed way and enjoy and learn from them and so on. But that's a really, really awesome story. So now you've been off it for just about, I believe, a month. How do you feel? How have you felt this past month?
Okay, I wish I could tell you, oh my God, everything is perfect. I made the best decision ever. And it just, things flow, money flow, you know, because I work in marketing.
Yeah.
I'm so cool. Well, let's say reality is a bit different. If I could turn the time back, I probably would have taken decision to do this in October. Why? Because of circumstances, due to the fact that now it's the end of quarter, performance reviews, everything. And I have a lot of work on Mindvalley side. But also I was packing and saying goodbyes and doing last things in Lithuania for the summer. So my mind was like around the documents, you know, home quarantine, fixing, flights, etc. So I really didn't have this peaceful state of mind to work properly on my business. So that's why I can't say, you know, it's according to my perfect imagination or expectations. However, do I regret? I do not. And even though I can't say that the big win is I launched the program or did this or like sold so many tickets, you know, to my programs. But the biggest win is that I am much more peaceful. I have time to rest. I have time to play. And generally, I feel aligned, even though a lot of scary inner demons are still trying to reach me, self-doubt, you know, hesitation, etc., constantly. Work in progress all the time. But I'm very, very happy I made the decision. And, you know, people don't say that a lot because it might sound as bragging, but I'm very proud of myself. And I think what we sometimes fail to do as human beings is to express gratitude towards ourselves, to express appreciation, not for what we achieve, but for our courage, for our efforts. Because that is so important. And I think that can be the base of actually happiness, how we talk to ourselves, what we tell to ourselves when things don't go right. And that we measure ourselves by, you know, efforts and willingness instead of results and accomplishments.
I'm gonna snip out that last like 30 seconds to a minute and just post it all over the place. I love the way you described it. I really appreciate and respect the honesty that you're like, yeah, it's not, you know, the perfect thing that, you know, you think it was going to be. Reality is a little different. But the most important thing that I took from everything you said, and this is something that I try to do as well, or to live by, is to have no regrets. I made this decision. Whatever consequences, whatever things happen as a result of it is fine, but not to look back and be like, ah, I wish. Are there, in hindsight, when you like you have, would have been better to do it a month later? Yeah, okay, maybe. But it's, again, it's just not, it's not the, you know, it's not the end of the world, and it's fine. This decision would have been done anyway. So that's all good. And the words you said of how you're feeling now, things I would have, what I was expecting to hear, which is more rested, maybe more peaceful, and I guess, you know, more time to play. But the way I take that is you have more flexibility to manage things how you would maybe you'd rather want to, compared to having, you know, a full-time job and doing the leadership coaching. One more thing you mentioned on the LinkedIn Live, which I really liked, and I didn't really think about, is how in any situation, typically, we have about five options. So we can struggle and complain, we can surrender or accept, adapt or change it, improve or impact it, or leave. Now, why is it so, when we all do this, and everyone in the world has done this, and it takes time to, you know, take more accountability and take more ownership into whatever choice you decide to make, but why is it so easy for all of us? Then our natural thing is to just struggle and complain rather than a more productive approach. We might still do the productive approach, but a lot of times we might have to complain a bit first.
Yeah, like actually I sometimes do that too, and I hear my team, and then we're like complaining, and I'm like, okay, so what do we do about it? So if we don't come up out of this complaint with a little action step, I'm not saying solution, little action step, I think that's bad. You know, but when you do, like, sometimes we need to just vent, right? Like, it's needed 100%. To ventilate. But the question is, are we coming with something out of that? And answering your question, why is it so easy? Well, because it's easy. We don't need to think anything else. What we do is we take what we already know, we take the situation, and we just change the words around. We put synonyms, and we just play in our head with those words. We don't need to think anything else. We don't need to invent. It's just like, so easy. And maybe now I'm having the thought that, well, it's like this feeling that I said before, and we talked about before, when you don't want to change what is not really good just because it's comfortable. Maybe again, it's much more comfortable to sit on the couch and complain about the world and yourself rather than stand up and go do something about it, because this requires additional effort. This requires additional movement or change of the status quo. So I guess that's why this is how it comes.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It is easy. It's very easy for me to just sit and complain, like, oh, this person did this, oh, this client, oh, my partner, whatever the case might be. Like, and it does take a lot more effort to be productive about it, because you need to not only think of something productive to do, you also have to get yourself out of that, you know, that complaining vibe, to like think, and then like to, you know, to move forward.
Exactly. And like, I don't know, I think the key here is just to ask ourselves, do we want to stay here longer? Not in that complaining state. Like, do we want to be here? Like, do we like being here? Because if yes, it's okay, keep going. There are no rules. I mean, there are, but there are no rules. We live by our own rules. It's the same with those emotions that we sometimes call negative, right? I think maybe they're not negative. They're just different emotions, like anger, sadness, irritation, hatred. We can feel them. We don't have to pretend that they're not here. But after some of the time, we can say, do I want to stay in this state a bit longer? Or maybe I want to get out of there. And I think that's the key. This is where proactiveness comes.
Yeah, no, for sure. I love how you said, how long do I want to stay here? I think that's a great question to get you thinking and to get you moving. Another one that I like to use is, again, I use it when I can is how is me staying here serving me? Is there any positive or any benefit I'm getting from this? No? All right, it's time to move our ass and, you know, get out of here. It's time to move forward. Greta, I want to be conscious of our time, so I just have three more questions for you. Number one is, so I was looking on LinkedIn, and I know you're also a leadership coach as well, and I was looking at the recommendations that your previous, you know, team members have given you, and they were all raving reviews. So I'm like, okay, so Greta does something that maybe a lot of people are not doing. So how would you, I guess, describe your leadership style if you had to?
I bet you're going to ask me, how did you force them to?
No, the way they're written, you can't force that kind of writing.
Thank you. I don't know. I know there are so many, books or styles that people say. I think my premier value in leadership is honestly care for people. I don't know if it's caring leadership or how to call it, but I think you can be firm and care for people. You can be nice and happy and fluffy sometimes and care for people. You can give very direct, constructive feedback and still care for people. That's why I love radical candor so much. So I think if you see the person behind the title, and if you do understand the context that this person has life, has health, has relationships, has this happiness wheel of life, then when you talk to, or when I talk to these people, I don't even think of the strategies, because I know I care, and whatever needs to be said or done will be said or done, but I will do it making sure that I'm honoring them as human beings.
And do you feel that because, like the way you said, you can be firm, but you can still care, you can be, you know, you can give very direct criticism and feedback. And have you found that when you approach it in that way, and let's say, for example, in a situation where you need to be quite harsh for something that has happened, do you feel that your team members or the people you're managing, do you see them react to it differently? Like, if you look at how they react to the situation and then think, what if I was like really like mean about this and really didn't like, wasn't empathetic, you know, towards them. Have you noticed that they've had a more receptive reaction, a more positive reaction from them?
I want to believe that yes. You know, of course I can't go inside their heads and I don't want to kind of guess, but from what I'm observing, it seems that yes. And then I think that people are way more willing to bounce back or bounce forward out of certain situations when they know that, yeah, they clearly know that it's something that is not good, you know, something is not working, but my leader cares for me to succeed. So I think this is the key. And yeah, I think that's the thing that I'm basing my, you know, leadership and decisions and everything on, that because it's not that everything, everywhere I went, everything was just very good. I had to also let people go. I had to decrease salaries sometimes, you know, cut costs, etc. And there were very difficult situations, or talk about performance. But bringing this caring part is super crucial. And by the way, I was not born with that. I think I have to add it here. When I was leader in student organization, now it's funny, it was not. I had a nickname of dictator. I would not name which one. And I was really a very bad, I wouldn't say even a leader, very bad boss. So you can learn, you can develop, you can grow. It's all ahead of you.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you for sharing that example making it very like clear that I think sharing that small story that the way you used to manage or lead, for example, compared to now is a complete, you know, 180. It's a complete mindset shift, it's complete everything. So for any managers out there, you can improve on whatever you've done or whatever you did, you know, in the past. Greta, first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show. I have two last questions for you, and these are questions that I ask all my guests that I never put in the questions that I send them. Number one is, looking back, I guess, either professionally or personally, you look back at your life, what are you most proud of for yourself?
You mean until now, what happened? What I'm most proud of?
Yeah.
Ooh. I think for standing up for my truth, whatever it could be, quitting that job back then, or changing my current job to part-time, or standing up in the school when I saw that what teacher is doing, or how she's marking my friends are unfair, or standing up for, I don't know, certain issues of the world. I think caring and standing up for my own truth is what I am really proud of.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. You know, I think that's, you want to try to, I guess, go through life. And a lot of people I've spoken to have said this, with whether, no matter what decision you make, as long as it resonated with who you felt you are and what your beliefs are and what you think is the right thing to do, that is, fills you with a lot of pride, and also makes you very grateful that you had the ability to do those kind of things as well. So I think that's a beautiful thing to be proud of. And for my last question, what is the message that you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
Remember that happiness lies within you. You just need to take a little time and choose to rediscover it within.
I think that's a fantastic, fantastic way to end the show. And I really love that. And it's a good reminder that, you know, it's not out there that we, a lot of times we think it is. It's actually inside. That's where you're going to find it. Greta, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been really looking forward to, you know, speaking to you. I knew the topic, and just like from our conversations, our back and forth on LinkedIn. I love the content, by the way. I'm a big fan. It's been a really, really fun show. I've learned so much from you about happiness. I think so many people can resonate to this as well. Before we round off, where can people find you, connect with you if they want to, you know, work with you? Just let us know where we can get in touch.
Sure. For now, LinkedIn is the best place, Greta Kessa. Or if you want more, say, less professional version of me and daily life, it's Instagram for sure, where I am still a happiness coach, but, you know, just a bit more lifestyle things. And I hope soon my website, not yet with name and surname, but I hope soon.
Awesome. So guys, if you want to get in touch, check out Greta's Instagram, or if you want to connect with her on LinkedIn, and the website will be coming soon, which I'm sure we're all excited for. Greta, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been amazing and just so much fun.
Thank you. I had so much fun. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Guys, to everyone listening, thank you so much. Please check out and follow, subscribe the podcast all over the place at hope.it.helps. And as always, guys, hope it helps. Peace.